Jackie's eyes. They looked into his own with what looked like total and complete recognition and unmistakable intelligence. Jibby tried to move, but found that he was paralyzed and unable even to speak as the mutie silently moved toward him. How it had gotten into the room, he wondered. He had heard absolutely no noise before, and although his hearing was nowhere near as good as Jack's, living in the Deathlands had honed his senses. No mutie should ever have gotten past him, but this one had. As the creature stood face to face with JB, the armorer suddenly remembered the dream he had had when he went through the gateway. And as he stood helpless, as the mutie reached out to touch his face, he realized that he was reliving that dream. Unable to defend himself, as the mutie chilled him and his friends. The mutie's hand brushed against his forehead, and JB saw nothing but blackness. Jack got the most comfortable chair he could find and brought it out into the hall. After positioning it in front of the only open doorway to the second floor, he sat down and surveyed his surroundings. Down the hall, he could hear Doc, at first talking to himself, then snoring as he finally fell asleep, and wondered how Dean was able to sleep with so much noise. He looked at his wrist chron. Just another hour to go before JB took his shift so he could get a quick rest himself, although the thumping noise he heard coming from JB and Mildred's room made him guess that the armorer wasn't getting much sleep himself. The soft noises continued to resound along the hallway. 1 hour was going to seem more like two. Sec Chief Grundwald pulled back the frame of the door so the rest of his sec men could enter the hotel without a sound. They trod lightly over the broken glass strewed about the lobby, their boots making slight crunching sounds as they walked.
Fillinger!
Sir!
Do a wreck of the hotel. Find out where they are and report back to me.
Fillinger was gone without a word, treading silently down the first floor hallway on his way to the stairs.
I want at least one man on each of the stairwells, and two outside on either side of the hotel. I don't want these outlanders slipping away.
The sec men scattered, each filling one of the posts Grundwald had outlined. The sec chief remained in the lobby by the front desk, using it as a makeshift command center. 5 minutes after he'd been sent away, Fillinger returned, only slightly out of breath.
They're on the second floor. They've got a sentry posted in the hallway in front of the only unlocked door to the floor. The other entrances have all been locked, so my guess is the rest of them are getting some sleep, taking turns on watch through the night.
Good work.
Do you have a plan?
Not yet. Give them some time to fall asleep and for the sedatives to kick in. Meanwhile, I'm sure I'll be able to figure something out.
An hour later, Jack Lauren was having trouble keeping his eyes open. During his entire time on watch, he hadn't heard a sound other than Doc snoring, which had mercifully toned down as the time traveler fell into a deeper sleep, and he found it hard to remain awake and alert. But now that he'd finished his watch, he was eager to be relieved so he could crawl into bed for some much-needed sleep. According to the rotation they'd used of late, JB followed Jack. Mildred, Doc, Dean, Christy, and Ryan completed the rotation. However, that would change if it turned out that the fruit they had eaten was drugged. But Teen hoped that it wouldn't be, as he was looking forward to sinking his teeth into those delicious-looking pears and apples. Jack could have waited for JB to come and relieve him, but with a Matran's jump and a long trek on foot, there was no reason why anyone would be getting up from a sound sleep on his or her own. He got up from his chair and went into Mildred and JB's room. He found them together on the same bed and fully dressed, JB on the right side, closer to the door. Jack thought this odd, as he had heard their movements in the night and assumed they were making love. Jack nudged the armorer's shoulder in an attempt to wake him. JB didn't stir. Jack tried again, this time nudging the men a little bit harder. Still nothing. He then tried to wake the doctor and received a similar lack of response from her. Jack noticed the remains of some of the fruit that Mildred had eaten. He immediately suspected that it was indeed poisoned, and that JB had also partaken of the fruit, which would explain why they weren't waking up. But why would JB have eaten the tainted food when he was the one who came up with the idea to hold off until its effects were gauged? Jack quickly left the room to alert Doc, the only other companion besides himself who hadn't partaken of the fruit, when he heard a noise coming from the room he had just exited. Turning around, he saw J.B. standing at the doorway to the room.
What happened? You're trying to take watch. Couldn't wake.
I'm all right. Just very tired.
Jack walked up to J.B., thinking he would move to let the teen inside the room. But for some reason, J.B. didn't budge.
Mildred okay?
J.B. smiled.
Mildred's okay.
Something about J.B. wasn't right. Jack tried peeking into the room to see if Mildred was indeed all right, and for a split second thought he saw not one, but two people lying on the bed. In the same positions he saw J.B. and Mildred. Despite his friendship with the armorer, instinct gave way in Jack, and he burst through the doorway past J.B. to see another J.B. More precisely, the same J.B. lying next to Mildred that he had originally seen upon entering the room the first time. But if that was J.B. Dix lying in the bed, then who was... Jack never even had the chance to turn back around. The Outlanders obviously knew what they were doing, Grunwald thought. While their choice of spending the night on the second floor of the old hotel at first seemed unwise, a closer look revealed that they had taken up a fairly secure defensive position. There was only one way onto the second floor, but many ways off. The sentry watching the entrance had pulled his chair into one of the room doorways so that it was impossible to take him out with the first shot. At best, a sec man would have to open the stairwell door and rush the hallway, giving the sentry at least an even chance at getting off a shot before he was chilled. That would surely awaken the rest of them, and then all hell would break loose. When that happened, the women could easily get caught in the firestorm. The Baron wouldn't like that at all. He wouldn't care if only one of his sec men came back from falls, as long as he had the two women with him. After all, a single stud could serve as dozens of women. It was the women who got heavy and delivered the goods. As an experienced sec chief with plenty of loyal men under his command, Grunwald knew he couldn't commit all his men to a firefight in the hopes of capturing just two women. But in this situation, what else could he do? He looked through the glass of the doorway at the open end of the hallway. The young, white-skinned sentry had looked to be having trouble staying awake, perhaps because of the sedatives or just normal fatigue. He finally rose and left the post, presumably to find his replacement, who hadn't showed up yet to relieve him. It was just the sort of advantage Grunwald had been hoping for. If nothing else, they could sneak into the hallway, slit the fatigued sentry's throat, and then take out the rest of the Outlanders as they slept, until they had captured the women or chilled all of the men.
Carter!
Sir!
Go around and join Fillinger at the door at the other end of this hallway.
And then what?
We take out their sentry, and then we start chilling.
Yes, sir.
Christy stirred beneath the sheets. She could feel something was wrong. She reached over to check on Ryan. Her lover was there, warm and resting comfortably in a deep, peaceful sleep. She wondered if she should wake him and let him know what she was feeling, but decided it wasn't strong enough to sound the alarm just yet. She'd have a look around, and if she noticed anything unusual, she could wake Ryan. Slipping out of bed, Christy was struck by the coolness of the night air. She dressed hastily, slipped on her bearskin coat, then picked up her Smith & Wesson and left the room. The hall was quiet. J.B. was supposed to be on watch down the hall, which was some 25 yards away. She'd check in with him later, but first she needed to check out the stairs at this end of the hallway. Something told her that whatever was sending her the danger signals was located at this end of the building. She looked through the glass in the locked door, peering first down the stairs and then up them. No one was there, but still her feeling of unease persisted. She opened the door and took a single step into the stairwell to get a better look. Suddenly, a hand was on her wrist and another on her mouth. She was yanked into the stairway, her Smith & Wesson torn from her grasp as she was thrown under the concrete landing. The door almost closed behind her, but was kept open by a clip from somebody's blaster. Two sec men had captured her.
We weren't expecting you, but we're glad you can make it.
The first sec man plastered a large piece of silver tape over her mouth, and they both worked to tie her hands behind her back with a strong piece of nylon cord.
And not even a scratch.
The Baron will be pleased.
Grunwald couldn't believe his luck. As he'd watched through the glass of the door, one of the two Outlander women wandered out of her room, opened the door at the far end of the hallway, and was caught on the other side by Fillinger and Cauterer. And best of all, she'd opened the door, and now they were free to enter the second floor away from the end of the hallway, without attracting the attention of a new sentry, who so far hadn't arrived yet.
O'Brien and Boris, stay here. The rest of you, come with me.